We're up to the Mishnah Daf Samach Amud Beis, and the next couple of lot are going to be very much what we would say Yeridea related. Yeridea, of course, all of Hilchas Avodah Zarah is in Yeridea too, but I mean kitchen Yeridea. So we start with the Mishnah, says the following: Yayin Esach Shenafal Agabe Anovim Yadichem Vehem Mutaros. So the Mishnah says if Yayin Esach falls on top of grapes, the assumption here, everything is cold, so then you just rinse the grapes off and you're allowed to eat them. Why? Because it's cold, there are no fissures in the grapes themselves, and therefore there's no reason to assume that the grapes have absorbed from the wine, and therefore there's no problem. Now, what the Mishnah does not address is the following very important question, which is, what would the shear be that would create a problem in the grapes? In other words, let's say you had a large volume of grapes, and you had a small amount of wine that fell into them, and the Mishnah doesn't address what would the status of that be. Now, the next line in the Mishnah,
does it make a difference if you rinse them with hot or cold wine?
I mean, if I were answering a practical, I would say wash it with cold water, take no chances. If you wash it with hot water, you have to start to ask the questions. Number one, will the grape skin absorb? Number two, what is the heat of the water in terms of irimikliak? So the Mishnah is going to assume yadichem anyway probably means cold water. That should be the assumption. So it says in Hayu Mavukaos Asuras, if the grapes were Mavukaos, they had Bikaim, they had splits, they had fissures, so then they're Asuros. Now, what the Mishnah doesn't address is what is the shear? In other words, is it, and there really, there are sort of two issues to consider here. Number one is, what is the status of Yayin Esach in terms of how much it's batel, and if it's batel at all, which is really dependent upon a second question. One of the things that we will read in the Mishnayos a few months from now, later in the Perek, is that Yayin Esach is one prohibition that is osir b'chol shehu. If it's real Yayin Esach, the Balei Atosos will make it when it came to Stam Yenim. Rabbeinu Tam claims that Stam Yenim can be batel b'shishim. But Yayin Esach is osir b'mashu. There is no bittel. Except there's one qualification, which is Yayin Nesach is only not batel if it falls into Yayin, or something that is the equivalent of Yayin, meaning what we call min bimino, something in the similar, same species. I'm going to deliberately avoid defining what that means, because that's a big machlokas on the next Amud between Abai and Rava. But min bimino, Yayin Nesach is oser b'mashu. But min b'she'en amino, if Yayin Nesach falls into your stew, let's say your meatballs that you're cooking, and a tiny bit of Yayin Nesach falls in, if it's batel b'shishim, that wouldn't be an issue. So the question is, what is the status of these grapes in terms of, are they the same min as the Yayin, or are they a separate min? So that really partially comes down to a question of, how do you define what is min b'mino and what is min b'she'en amino? Classically speaking, in Yeridea, funny Rama aside, which is found in the first siman Hilchos Taruvos, leaving aside one very strange Rama, the usual assumption when we study Yeridea today with the Isurim that we deal with is that we define min bimino as things of the same flavor, and we define min b'she'eno mino as things of a different flavor. And the reason for that is that we assume that min haTorah, things are batel b'rov, and a majority, provided that you can't taste them. So if wine falls into wine, if there's more kosher wine than treif wine, then you can't taste the treif wine. It happens to be that we might be machmir by yayin. But in general, let's say I have nevela meat, and I have kosher meat, and they taste the same. They're the exact same kind of meat. So if I have a majority of nevela meat, certainly min haTorah, there is bittul b'rov. Midrabanan, you require shishim. You require 60 times. Whereas if you are dealing with pork and beef together, and kosher beef, so there, because you can, there are a different flavor, we call that min b'she'en amino, because the way we paskin, min b'she'en amino requires shishim min haTorah. In other words, you have to not be able to taste the tray food in order for it to be mutter. It's not enough to have a rove, to have a majority of heter. So normally when we speak of min b'mino, min b'sheino mino, we're speaking of things of the same flavor, things of a different flavor. This situation, as we're going to see, is a little more complicated. So we'll hold off on discussing that for now. But for right now...
Solid liquid does not make it.
It does. Let me rephrase your question slightly. Things that blend versus things that don't blend. We often say, we use the term lach balach. This may be a little familiar to some of you because we have learned this before. And by the time you learn it for the fourth time, it starts to become a little more intuitive. We distinguish between what's called lach balach and yavesh b'yavesh. Lach balach means really something wet in something wet, and yavesh b'yavesh means something dry in something dry. But what those are terms usually mean actually is not wet and dry. Yavesh b'yavesh is almost always dry. Lach balach can be something that is dry, like flour, but it's something that blends. Whereas yavesh b'yavesh, tarovas yavesh b'yavesh, means I have three, frankfurters here. The two are treif and one is kosher, and I can't tell the difference. As a general rule, you can only have yavesh b'yavesh by min b'mino. Because if it's min b'sheino mino, it's kind of difficult to confuse them, right? If I have a hammer, a screwdriver, and a wrench, sitting in front of me on the table, it's hard to say that, one of them is batel. If the wrench were muktash lavo de zera, so you're not going to say, oh, well, it's yavish b'yavish is batel. In fact, by the way, min haTorah, and we've learned this before, but we're going to learn it again, min haTorah, literally, if I have three, let's say, frankfurters in front of me, and two are, A&H, and one of them is Hebrew National, but I can't tell which one is which, and I think that a hot dog is not such a davar chashev. I think it's not what we call a chaticha harias kabed babifnei orachim. Therefore, the halacha is that all three are mutter. So one sheet, the Rush says that I could have, a triple whopper, on one big bun, have all three frankfurters together. The Rush boss says that I can't eat them all at the same time, but I can eat all three of them, and we try to be machmir that one person should not eat all three of them, but two people can certainly between them, eat all three frankfurters. So that's halacha lemaisa. That's not, in theory, that's actually real. But if you have, if you have a pork chop, a hamburger, and a hot dog together, what we call min b'sheino mino, it's kind of hard to talk about a mixture here. A mixture means you can't distinguish one from the other. I never actually looked at a pork chop, but I assume you can tell the difference between looking at that and looking at something else.
Does intent play any role in this? So, for example, if I deliberately mix them together.
So the answer is yes, it does. I don't remember if this is going to come up in our perek. I'm trying to remember. This is the sugya of Ein Mevatlin Issa L'Chatchila. It's dealt with in the second. It's part of. It's only a piece of Simen Tzadi Tesen Yerodeh, the second Simen of Taruvos. I don't remember if it comes up in this parak. We assume that there's an Isser generally of being Mevatel Issa L'Chatchila. There's a cold discussion in the Mishonim as to, number one, is that ever an Isser D'Oraisa to do that? And number two, to what things does that actually apply? There may be certain Isurim Derabbanan or a certain segment of Isurim Derabbanan where it's Mutar Levatel L'Chatchila, but the general rule is it's Ein Mevatlin Issur L'Chatchila, and if you did it, we say it's not Batel for the person who did it and for the person for whom you did it. But that's probably a Knas Midrabbanan.
So if Chaim Yankel walked in the room, it would be Mutar.
For a third party who had no vested interest in it, it would be permitted, yes. Okay, so for the moment, the Mishnah says that if the grapes are split so that the wine can be absorbed, then it's aser. If the grapes are not mefuka'os, that's the first line in the Mishnah, it's mutter. The Rishonim here quote a Yerushalmi that suggests that if the grapes have been plucked off the wood, off the stem, then that's also considered mevukos because the little hole at the end. But as long as they're still attached to the grapes, to the wood stem, and the grapes themselves are not don't have fissures in their skin, so then it would be permitted. You would just rinse the grapes off. Now, the next line in the Mishnah, Nafal agabe te'enim o agabe te'marim. Now, this is a very, very contentious line. Let me first read the full line, and then I'll explain why it's contentious. If it falls on top of figs, te'enim o te'marim, or dates, im yesh bahem min osein tam asar. If you can taste the wine in the figs or in the dates, then they're usher. Now, no saint tam is a code word for Shishim. Now, the truth is that's actually anachronistic. It's backwards. Shishim, that we always talk about 60, is actually just a code for no sein tam, the sinas tam. The term Shishim is not, the word is found, but in the context of Bittul, Shishim does not exist, in, as far as I know, in Tannaitic literature. It doesn't exist in the Mishnah, it doesn't exist in the Tosefta. The language that they always use is Beno Saint Tom. But for our purposes, we will understand that as meaning Shishim. The reason for that is, number one, when it comes to Isser Min Bemina, when we have a mixture of two things of the same flavor, that Midrabanan we require Shishim, Midaraisa you only require a row of a majority. So we often will say Beno Saint Tom. But obviously, when you have Min Bemino, there's no Nasinas Tom. If my chopped meat, if kosher chopped meat and my treif chopped meat get blended together, I can't taste the treif chopped meat. Right? So you can't really say, literally, Beno Saint Tom, even if the Mishnah might sometimes use that term. So Shishim is the only, is the Din de Rabban on there. Now the reason why Shishim is used is because the Chachamim assume, and this is the Gemara in the 7th Perek in Chulin, that almost all Isurim would be Bato B'Shishim. Even things that are tastier, that give more flavor. Aside from spices, assume things that are very, aside from flavoring agents. In general, they were Mishaer, that meat and a certain kind of very dull vegetable, the tom of the meat would be Bato within Shishim. So that's where we pick the number Shishim to use by Min Bemina, where the number in a sense is arbitrary, because once you have a majority, you can't taste it anymore, so we use Shishim. And Shishim is what we use, Ashkenazim certainly use, when it comes to Min B'Sheino Mino. Now, in theory, what you could do is, you could ask a guy. The Gemara says in Chulin and in Zvachim, that if you have a mixture of Min B'Sheino Mino, so you ask a guy to taste it. And if the guy tells you, the kfela, as the term is, it means literally a cook, a professional cook. It's a question whether you need a cook or any guy can do it. All sorts of opinions. You can imagine like four different opinions in the Rishonim. Don't ask how you have four opinions in there, but you do. And so really, in principle, you should be able to ask a guy. So it may be there are many situations in which you have 30 times Isser, Heter, Keneged, Isser, and that's enough and to make it Mutter. But the Ramah says we don't rely upon Kfela, we always use Shishim. In fact, many Rishonim would say that if you do rely upon Kfela, you can't use Shishim unless you don't have a guy. The Gemara says, if you don't have a guy, he says, when do you use Shishim? The Gemara says, either when it's Min Bemino, so nobody can taste it, or if it's Min B'Sheino Mino, but you don't have a guy to taste it, so then we rely upon Shishim. But if it's possible to use a guy, so again, not for Ashkenazim, we don't allow it, so both Lakula and Lachumra, but for Sfardim, in principle, if you have a guy available, you're not supposed to rely upon Shishim, you're supposed to actually ask the guy to taste it. And it might be a Kula, and it might be a Chumra, it depends upon what the food was.
But this is all Midrabana, because Midraisa would be Rov?
Only by Min B'Mino. Min B'Sheino Mino, Min B'Sheino Mino, so that might be very well be... It's hard to say. In other words, are you allowed to take a chance on it, midoraisa, using shishim, rather than just asking a guy? I'm not really sure about that. But by Min Bemino, it's the Rabbanon. Min Bemino, shishim is the Rabbanon. Rov is what's required, deraisa. Rov means 51%, 50%+ of kosher. Okay. So the Mishnah, the last line that we just read in the Mishnah says that as opposed to falling on grapes, if it falls on figs or dates, you follow no Saint Tom. Now, the simple reading of the Mishnah, and this may even stand in some ways, is that there really is a contrast between the first line and the second, first part and the second part. Because in the first part, the Gemara says it falls into grapes. If they're mevukos, it's asuras. It doesn't say what? Em yesh bahem beno sein tam. Now, why? Presumably because the yayin will not be batel in the grapes if it gets into them. In other words, there is no bittel. That's what I would have guessed. Now the Mishnah because it's Mimimino.
Min
B'Sheino Mino, right? Te'enim and Tamarim are not the same flavor, species or flavor right. of wine or grapes, whereas grapes and wine are conceivably the same flavor. We call one of them wine, we call one of them grapes, but if you're talking about especially freshly pressed wine, you know, before it's fermented, for sure, it's going to be the same flavor as the grapes. Yeah. Now the Mishnah continues with a story. Umase bebaitos benzunim, shehevi grogros besfina. He brought dried figs with him on a boat. Vinishtabra chavis shel yayin nesach, vinafal al gabehem. There was a barrel of yayin nesach there, and it fell on top of the grogros. As an aside, the Ritva points out, obviously this wasn't a Jewish-owned boat. because a Jewish-owned boat would not be allowed to allow the guy on carrying Baal Yarnesa, because presumably he was renting out his boat or even letting the guy use his boat as a favor. So obviously it was a boat owned by a guy, which a Jew hired, you know, paid for passage and to carry his stuff. And there was a guy who obviously had some Yarnesa with him. That's not a problem for the Jew. But in this case, the problem was that the barrel broke and it fell on the figs. V'sha'ala chachamim v'hitirim. And he asked the rabbis, and he said, what's the din? And they said, it's mutar. Zeha klal. Kol shehabana aso b'no seintam aser. Kol she'ein bahana aso b'no seintam mutar. Before we even translate the klal, it's a little strange. We said that if it falls on the ta'inim and the grogros, it's oser b'no seintam. And then Baitis ben Zunun had a story, and the chachamim told them it was mutar. And then the Mishnah gives us a rule, which says that if there is bahana b'no seintam, which the way the Gemara understands, if the flavor that is imparted to the heter by the iser is beneficial, it's good, it's what we would call, the Gemara will term, no seintam lishvach, so then then the stuff will be aser. However, ein bahana aser b'no seintam, if the flavor that is imparted is negative, meaning it is a net negative, the mixture, and you'd rather it not have happened, and you're not really benefiting from the iser, and it's a minority, then the Mishnah says it is mutar. Kigon, chometz shenafal al gabei grisin, vinegar that falls on top of beans. Apparently they thought that tasted terrible. Just as an aside, which the Gemara will talk about eventually, but it's worth reminding ourselves, we've spoken about this before, this principle of no saying tam lifgam, that when the iser imparts has a negative impact upon the heter, that it is permitted, is the basis on which we say that as a general rule, unless you're cooking sharp things, if you cook kosher food in a treif kli that was clean and hasn't been used for 24 hours, that it is in fact permissible to consume the food. It's usur to cook in the pot, lest you come to cook in it within 24 hours, but if you did cook b'dieved, the food may be consumed, unless it's a sharp food. And the reason for that, the reason why we permit the food generally, is because the assumption is that any tam that comes out of that pot after 24 hours will be no sein tam lefgam. Unless it's in sharp food, the Gemara has this idea. We learned this a long time ago in the second perek by Asafetida, Chiltis, that sharp things can transform what would normally be no sein tam lefgam. They will taste positively in those sharp things. That's why every rabbi's nightmare is when you cook onions, okay? Because onions are sharp, and therefore it changes, you know, all the coolness that we have all of a sudden become more questionable. Okay. So no saint tam lefgam is not only with a pot that hasn't been used for 24 hours. No saint tam lefgam can actually be with real tray food. In other words, if chazir normally would be batel, chazir schmelz, you know, would be batel b'shishim in a regular pot of meat, but if, let's say, you have a particular kind of food, meat, whatever, where chazir schmelz actually is bad for the flavor, it makes the taste worse, then you don't need shishim in order to be mevatelit.
That was
yes. Yes. Okay. Now, here's the problem. There are two problems that arise. And there's only one obvious problem in the Mishnah. The obvious problem in the Mishnah is the Gemara's opening question, which is, Masa Listor. You tell us a din, and then you tell a story which seems to contradict that din. Now, the truth is, is there really a contradiction between the din in the Mishnah and the story? What does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says, the way we have it, it says that if it falls on top of figs or dates, if it is b'no seintam, it's asur. And ma'aseh b'baitis ben zunim, shehevi grogros b'sfina, and the chachamim told them it was mutar. So, is that story really contradicted in? How could we explain why the story doesn't contradict it in? I think it's very straightforward. Adrian? No, we don't know that yet, remember. Yeah. We don't know that yet. So again, if it falls into the figs and the dates and it flavors it, it's aser. And ma'aseh b'baitis ben zunim, that he was carrying dried figs, and yayin nesach fell on them, and he came to the chacham, and they said it's mutar. This is a very simple, Ben. It didn't flavor it. Very simple. It didn't flavor it. Yes, in yesh pem b'no sein tam, it's aser. In this case, the chachamim said, if you can't taste it, it's mutar. End of story. That would have been very simple. So why does the Gemara think there's a Masa Lister? So the answer may lie in the fact, I haven't checked the Kisvayad, but I think most of the Rishonim believe that the line about figs and dates is actually not in the Mishnah. If you take a look in Tosfos, Hachi Garsinan, sort of right next to the Mishnah in the middle. Hachi Garsinan b'seder ha-Mishnah. Yayin nesech shenofal agabe anavim, yadichum v'heim mutaros, v'im hayu mevuka'os asuros. That's, we have in our Mishnah. U'maise b'baitus benzunim she'ehem evri grogros, ze'aklal, kigon chomet shenofal agrisim, and Ovid kolchavim she'em avir is a few blot from here. Adkan l'shon Rabbeinu Shmuel. That is the Rashbam's language. As Rashbam says, we don't have the line in the Mishnah about the dates and the figs. So, according to that, Tosis points out, and I think that's still a better reading, I think that's why the Gemara reads more easily, all the Mishnah said is that it falls onto grapes if there are no fishers, so then you wash them. If they're mevukos, they're mutaros. And then they tell the story of Baitis Benzunim. Now, what are grogros?
Mevukos are
asuros. I'm sorry, say it backwards. Sorry. Mevukos are asuros. What are grogros? Well, they're dried figs. Now, they don't have a smooth skin. And they also have presumably had their stems pulled out. So, grogros, almost by definition, should be mevukos. So then it makes perfect sense why the Gemara asks the question, Masa Listor. But if you read the piece with Te'enim and Tamarim, it's not as obvious why the Gemara should see a stira, because Ben provided the obvious resolution. It's not really a contradiction, it's obvious. Oh yes, obviously, it wasn't Beno St. Tom. It wasn't Beno St. Tom. If you take a look in the continuation of Tosfos, he says, Ulefize, Tzarech Lefaresh, Shemak Shebegemara Masa Listor, Al Nefilas Yayim Banovim, Koi. It's going on the wine falling to the grapes, the grogros damu lemevukaos. Right? There would be no question. In other words, grogros are really are by definition mevukaos. Aval esfarim de garse b'mishna nafal agabe tamar muteimin emiyesh b'menose in tamasar umaisa b'baitis benzunim uparach b'barog b'pshitos masa listor de parach me grogros l'tenim was figs to figs umishani. Diyayin agabe grogros no same time alifgam. So you have to assume, according to this, that it was a case where there was nesinas tam, and that's why the Gemara is going to explain in a moment that there's no contradiction, because even though there was nesinas tam, it was no same time alifgam, which is what you said, Adrian. Okay, so that's a sidebar. It doesn't have a huge impact in Din, but there is a question of what the text of the Mishnah was reading, and then what was the Gemara's question. The Gemara, let's go to the Gemara now, and the Gemara says the following, Masa Listor, there's a contradiction between the story of Baitis Benzunim and something that came before it. So the Gemara says, Chasuri Michasra V'hachi Katani. There's something missing in the Mishnah. It's not clear whether this is a textual emendation, an interpretation. V'hachi katani, this is the way the Mishnah should read. Eno sein tam lefgam hu mutar. In other words, the Mishnah, let's read the way we have our Mishnah. Nofal agabe teinim al agabe tmarim. Im yesh par meno sein tam osur. V'im no sein tam lefgam is mutar. Uu maise bebait dispensunim. That the stuff fell on his figs and he came to Acham and he said it was mutar. Why? Because it was no sein tam lefgam. So, umaisinami baitanzunim shahaya mevi grogros besfina vinishtabra chavishayanesach menafal gabem ubamasa lefnecha chamen vehitirum. Alright. So that already explains that will explain why there's no contradiction between the story and the halacha that precedes it, because you have to insert one little qualifying line in there that something that's no Saint Tom is only oser if it's no Saint Tom l'shrach, but if it's no Saint Tom l'fgam, it's mutter. So now the Gemara tells a story. Hahu kari dechite denafala chavita diyayin esach. There was a pile of wheat, we're talking about not flour, but wheat kernels, that a barrel of yayin esach broke and fell upon it. Shari rava lizabune laovde kochavim. Rava permitted to sell it to a non-Jew. But a Jew wasn't allowed to consume it. So the Gemara is going to ask a question on the story later. But one second, isn't this like wine that fell on the grapes? The chitim, the kernels, are not mevukos. They're not split open. They're whole wheat kernels. So the Gemara is going to explain why wheat kernels, the way they are considered mevukos all the time. Okay. That's sort of where the Gemara is eventually going to go with this. But right now, the Gemara got stuck on something that happened. Now, as an aside, there was a story in Pesachim about a boat with flour before Pesach that sank in the river. And they brought the flour up, and Rava permitted selling it, the flour, to non-Jews before Pesach. Now, there, Rava was challenged, I think by the same Amor, Rabba Bar Levi, who's about to challenge him here, who said, how can you do that? Jews are going to go ahead and buy the flour from a guy, not realizing that this flour already got soaked in water. They're going to buy it for Pesach, and it's going to be a chametz problem. So Rava backed away. Now, we have a story here, which is the following. Esve Rava Bar Levoi LeRava. How can you sell the stuff to a guy? The Braisa says, Beged She'avad Bo Kilayim. If you have a beged in which, let's say it's a woolen beged, but somewhere in there are a couple of strands of a linen. Hareze Elohim karena la'ovde kochavim elo yasena merdas l'chamor. You're not allowed to sell it to an non-Jew. You're not allowed to make it a saddle for a donkey. Aval ose oso tachrichen l'meis mitzvah. You're allowed to make it into shrouds. Shrouds for a meis mitzvah. So why are you not allowed to do this? La'ove kochav in my time alo, Dilma asa lezabune li'Yisrael. You're not allowed to sell the garment to a non-Jew, because you know what he might do? He might turn it around and sell it to a Jew. And the Jew's not going to know that this kalayim, because it looks like a woolen garment. If it were a regular shatnez garment where it's obvious that it's shatnez, okay, that's not a problem. But here, there are a couple of threads that are lost somewhere in it. So you're not allowed to sell something to a guy that a Jew could buy from the guy with heter, because the Jew might buy it and be nichshal in that which is aser, and he doesn't realize it. So then Rava said, Hadar Shara lemitchinu lefinu lezabinu l'obedir chavim shalob v'nei Yisrael. Rava permitted grinding up the wheat, baking it, and selling it to a guy, not when a Jew is around. Because if a Jew is not around, you sell it to a Jew is not going to buy that bread from the guy, because he's going to assume it's pas shogai, pas nach, mas nachri. And it's not talking about a baker here, that we are lenient by pas paltar, but rather, we're talking about literally pas balabais, pas akum, which you're not allowed to eat. So as long as, if you sell it to a guy in the presence of another Jew, the other Jew might buy it from the guy. Because he'll say, that's a Jewish bread. Not realizing that the reason why the Jews sold it to the guy is because it had the flavor of Yayin Nesach in it. Okay.
Is this making an assumption, though, that, these chitim somehow are mavukaot? Here I'm saying you don't say that. It seems to be.
No, the Gemara is going to say it in two lines. Just right. But right now the Gemara, is dealing with this issue. So Rava turns around and says, fine, you can't sell it straight to a guy. You have to, you've got to, already process it in a way, sell it to a guy in a way that a Jew can't buy it from the guy.
So why is it Mutar B'Hanah?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. The Rishonim asked this question. The answers are not entirely thoroughly appealing. One answer is that it's Stam Yenam, and Stam Yenam is Mutar B'Hanah. The problem is, the Gemara didn't hold that Stam Yenam is Mutar B'Hanah. I didn't notice any other answers. The Rifa is the one who asked the question. One might have said that you sell it to the guy without, in other words, you're not really getting Hanah from the Yayin Nesach, because if you can just barely taste it, let's say, I don't know if it's okay, but you're getting Hanah from the bread, not from the wine. So it may be like when you have a tarovis of Yayin Nesach and Yayin Kasher, that according to some Tanaim, you can sell it to a guy as long as you deduct the amount of the Yayin Nesach in it. Right? It's a good question, and one has to fetch an answer. But let's put that aside for the moment.
So the wheat is soaked in wine, yeah?
Yeah, the wheat got soaked.
So when he grinds it up, does that contaminate his millstone?
Let's say he has a non. I'll just keep it simple. He has a non-Jew grinded up in his millstone. I mean, the answer is probably not. Probably it's tonein. But it gets into the whole host of other questions about sharp things, sharp not sharp taste, but sharp implements and knives and so on. So let's leave that aside.
Wouldn't we assume with the wheat that it should be mutter, but Rav's actually being mocking and saying, you know what? Don't use it. Isn't that what you? That's why I read it. It actually is mutter. It is batel, but
no, it's also to consume, which is why he said sell it to a guy. The question immediately pops up right then and there.
Right.
But why are you allowed to sell it to a guy if it's neser because of the ayin neser?
No, I was reading the other. I was saying it actually should be mutter, but you know what? Don't eat it.
No. When he permits selling to a guy, it's because it's aser, which is why the Gemara is then going to challenge it about chitim. You know, why are chitim different than grapes? But the other question, Sam, which, and as I think about it, are there any cases in the Gemara where they talk about yayin nesach? There are in the Mishnah, actually. Normally, all the cases where the Tanaim discuss whether you can sell the wine chutz mivdin yayin nesach are cases of yayin b'yayin. But there are things in the Mishnah in the second parak that we learned a while ago, foods that you're not allowed to get hanah from because you can assume the guy mixed yayin in. Right, so, but there, right, so, whatever the answer is, somehow, there's no Isser Hanah here. So, the problem that Tosus points out, Tosus dibo maschel eschei rabba bar levoi l'rava, is ki hai pircha parche rabba bar levoi l'rava gabe hi arba de tava bechishta b'psachim. The boat that sank in the river, in Psachim, rabba bar levoi asked the same question to Rava when Rava was going to permit selling the flour to non-Jews, that Jews are going to turn around and buy it from them. The Shari Rava Lizabunalov de Kochabim, Vahadar Bay Rava, and Rava backed out there. Tsarach Lomar, Sha'achar Shneha Maisim Elu Hikshalo, Achatalmud Kova Pirchal Shneim. You have to say that Rava, both Paskin, both Shilas, which were separate Shilas on separate occasions, before Rava Bar Levi challenged him on either one of them. And Rava Bar Levi challenged him on both of them, and Rava backed out then on both of them. Because otherwise, Ki Ein Nachon Lomar Shata Rava Shte Pa'amim. In other words, Tosus is making a point about the editing of the Shas. It's a point that I've made in, I don't know, here in other contexts. There are five times in Shas where the Gemara speaks about the principle of Kos Kiddushin, the Chachamim annulling Kiddushin after the Kiddushin were done seemingly, well, in three of the cases, seemingly properly. And five times, Ravina asked Ravashi, Teinach the Kaddish B'Kaspa. It makes sense if you were Makadesh a woman with Kesep. But how does Hafkas Kiddushin work with if they had Kiddushin with Bia? And the Gemara gives some answer. The Gemara Ravashi gives some answer. So you have to ask yourself the question. Ravina was presumably a smart fellow. How many times did he have to ask Ravashi the question to get the same answer? Right? You figure maybe the second time you ask the question, maybe. But by the third time, when you keep asking the same question, it's like you're suffering amnesia. So Tosa's point here is it's inconceivable Rava had one Shaila. Rav made a mistake. Rav Bari Levi challenged him, and Rav acknowledged his mistake and changed his psak. And then the story happens again in a different context. Right? Presumably, Rava would have realized after the first time that if you allow flour to be sold to Goyim, there's a danger that Jews will turn around and buy flour, because you're allowed to buy flour from Goyim. So you should never be in a position where you're allowed to sell flour shalisser to a Goy. It would make sense. So that's why Tosa says that the stories presumably happen, at the same time, or, close proximity. Rabba Bar Levi challenged him, and then Rabba backed out on both of them. But the Gemara presents it as two different stories in two different places, where in effect it's really one story. You know, as we remember, as I always quote Rabbi Dulitz, fool me one, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Okay, so Rabba wasn't fooled twice, he was only fooled once.
Yes, we don't want to show glide to Rabba. You want to make right.
That's what I was saying. You don't want to say Rava was taught twice, Charlie.
I mean, the academic answer is also like the story only happened once, and they just have a different understanding of the details of the story.
The truth is, it is an academic might say that, although in this particular case, it seems. In other words, it seems unlikely. What I say by the Ravina and Ravashi is that question only happened once. And the Gemara puts it in five different places. It seems likely it happened once, but there, fundamentally speaking, the role that Ravina's asking is a question that can be asked in a different context. Here you have to assume, An academic wouldn't say the story happens. An academic would say there might have been two different stories, and Rabbi Bar Levi challenged him on one, and the Gemara took that and put it on the other as well and filled out the story. That's actually what you would say. So it's not that far away from where Tosus is going, but yes. So that's the way an academic would parse it. Yes.
He's not going to definitely sell it to a Jew. Maybe there's a sub. How do you know that the guy who owns this, leak that soaked in wine, end up selling it?
He doesn't have to sell all of it to a Jew.
It's not his only customer.
I know, but if he sells any of it to a Jew, it's a problem for that Jew. He doesn't sell all. Presumably, he's not the guy. He's not selling it all to one person. He's not a wholesaler, so it doesn't matter. As long as you're in a place where there are Jews who would likely buy, you don't care whether one Jew is buying or Jews are buying all of it or Jews are buying some of it. You still want to avoid that potential takala.
So why can you buy flour from that's in water? If you're concerned about flour and water,
only for Pesach.
No, I understand. I understand. So why should you be allowed to ever buy before Pesach to buy flour from? A guy, perhaps. It may not. Is it?
You don't.
No.
Yeah. We don't. No. That's the point.
Any flour?
We don't. You don't buy. You certainly don't buy flour to use on Pesach. Yes, the only flour that's used on Pesach is what we call kimcha de pischa, even if it's not b'shmur matzah. We don't buy. It's called kemach men ashuk. The Gemara talks about might be okay b'di'evad because you're not hoshesh unless you know what happened. But our practice is we would never. No one would say you can. Nobody bakes with wheat flour pretty much on Pesach. But you can make matzah on Pesach if you want. But you can't go to ShopRite and buy the 5 pound bag of flour and do that because that flour is almost definitely been soaked. If it's white flour, has been soaked in water. I'm not telling you it's mamish chametz, but no. The answer is we don't buy, kemach men ashuk for the use on Pesach. Exactly. That's for water. We're not. There's a funny Rabbeinu Hanan al Rishonim quote here who says maybe he said and he says you. I don't know if he says you can't eat pas shel akum because maybe yayin esach got mixed in. And all the Ramban, I think it's Rabbi Hanan. The Ramban says, what's he talking about? Right. We don't assume that wine got mixed in the flour. This is a story where it happened. Right. But water and wheat, we do assume that water. For us, we assume certainly there was lasisa, what's called soaking in water, to bleach it. Okay. So. The Gemara now asks, "Tanan, yayin esach shenafal agabe anavim yadichem heimutaros v'mahayim muvukos asuros." So that's the Mishnah. So muvukos in she'en muvukos lo. It's only if the grapes are have fissures. But if they don't, then you can just rinse it off. So by the wheat doesn't have fissures in it. So the Gemara says, "Amar apapa shani chite hol va'agav tzirayhu kimuvukos damyan." So something about the shape of the wheat, that it's treated like it's mavukaos. That's what the Rabbi Papa says, that all wheat, it doesn't matter whether you actually, split wheat or not, the wheat is considered mavukaos. Okay, the Rishonim say not barley. The truth is wheat actually, if you look at wheat, the barley is kind of roundish. At least pearl barley. I don't know if all barley is like that, whereas the wheat is a little bit longer and it does have kind of the indentation. So, okay, that's what the Gemara says. Now, I want to now step away from our Gemara for a little bit, and we probably won't finish today, but hopefully we'll finish next week. The Gemara said that if you had a beged she'avad bel kilayim, harez aleim kevena ol lekochavim, but you're allowed to make it as tachrichan lemeis mitzvah. Now, first, just one observation. If it's a beged she'avad bel kilayim, why don't you say bittel? Let's Tosus this question. The answer is also obvious. It's one of those questions you say, wait, I should have asked that question. And you hear the answer and said, oh, that's obvious too. The answer is that the definition of kilayim is a taroves. That's what it means. I mean, it doesn't have to be that you can see one or the other. The whole point is, normally, every issur in the Torah, you're not allowed to eat chazir. We need a pasuk to tell you that if you, let's say we have a taroves of chazir, or a taroves of chametz on Pesach, taroves chametz of chametz dag and gamor, requires a pasuk. The Gemara and the Tanoim in the third parakim sachem have pasukim for it. Right? When you have the issur of, when you have chazir which flavors a pot, you need some type of a pasuk to tell you that it's also, because normally the Torah says, if it's a chazir, you're not supposed to eat. That means eating chazir straight up. That's not talking about taroves. But kilayim, by its definition, is a ruvin. It is a mixture of two things. That which prompts, I think, Tosfos or somebody else to ask, well, then why is basar b'chalav batel? Because after all, we talk about if the chalav falls into the basar, if you can't taste the chalav, then it's mutter. But if basar b'chalav, by its very definition, right, the Gemara says basar b'chalav is a chiddush. So one of the aspects of the Chiddush potentially is, though this might be rejected, is that you're taking heter plus heter and you get iser. Right? That's not usual. So if that's the, but certainly basar b'chalav is by definition a taroves. So why is there ever bittul? So the Rishonim explain how we know that basar b'chalav is not the same thing as kelayim. But kelayim, by its very definition, is a taroves. And if within one garment, where there are a few couple of things of linen that got lost and you can't find them anymore. Right, see, normally by a taroves, for example, if you cooked soup and there was some chaz or schmaltz fell in. So I think the Ramah quotes some of the Achronim. I don't know if it's just about chaz or schmaltz, but that you're supposed to let the soup cool and congeal so you can skim the fat, even if it's batel b'shishim, because that which you can remove of the iser, you're supposed to remove. Right? It's not called the taroves if you can see the iser. Right? As I gave you my example of, you know, my hammer, my wrench, and my screwdriver. Thank you. Is not considered a taroves because I can pull out the individual components. So. So that's not called tarovis, but a begich avav al kelayim. So if you can see the linen, that's what happens when your shatnez checker pulls it out. But if you can't see the linen, why is it us? That is the definition of tarovis, but it's still, the Torah doesn't limit it to cases where you can see the linen. The whole point of it is that you have a tarovis. If you could, we don't even almost say that if you can see it, it's not even called what we classically call a tarovis. It's just two things sitting next to one another. You take the heter and you leave the iser.
If you had a swatch of kelayim that was mixed into other swatches.
That's different, right? The kash of Tosis is on beged of abal kelayim, on the beged itself, not on the other begadim. Once you have one beged that's kelayim, its mixture with other begadim is not because of shatnez per se. In other words, a kelayim beged, you know, three begadim separate, it's not a kelayimish, it's not a kelayim of the two things together, it's just one of these begadim is asur, and I don't know which one it is.
What can you wear? You can wear any of them. No.
Yes, in theory, if a beged is not a davar chashuv, okay. If a beged is not a davar chashuv, which in the time of the Gemara, it would seem almost certainly that it had to have been. Yeah. If a beged was not a davar chashuv, then arguably, yes, three of us could each wear a different jacket. Okay. So then the Gemara said you're allowed to make it tachrichin for a meis mitzvah. Now, here's where things get interesting. It's not, presumably, it's not only a beged sh'avad bo kilayim. Presumably, a beged, and the Mishonim say this, mamish kilayim, in a straight-up kilayim, you can also make for a meis mitzvah. Why are you allowed to use the beged sh'avad bo kilayim for a meis mitzvah, for tachrichen, for the shrouds? Because you're not allowed to get hana from the tachrichen once they're used with the meis. The rule is that anything that's buried with the meis, with the intent of leaving it there, is asur b'hana. A meis is asur b'hana, and therefore, all the tashmish hames are asur b'hana, and the quintessential tashmish hames, accessory to the mace, are the shrouds, or is the shrouds. So if you put it on a mace, you don't have to worry about a chai subsequently wearing this baggage of about kelayim, because he's not going to wear it for other reasons. He doesn't have to know that it's asur mishum kelayim. He already knows that it's asur because it is asur b'hana, as is the mace. But the question is, why is it appropriate to bury a mace in kelayim? The Gemara Menachos, what?
Why not?
So there are two possible reasons, without looking further, why one could think that it would be problematic. The first, which is the more obvious one to us rationalists, is that it's loig larush. It's a little bit mocking the dead. And we're going to talk about the issue of wearing tzitzis that are out in Beis HaKvaros and so on. Number two, not what you would have expected, is what happens when it comes to chiyas ha-meisim, and the mace arises from his or her grave. And there is a tradition, perhaps, that belevushim himomdim. So now, the mace, who's no longer mace, is going to be in violation of the halacha. The question is, if a person dies and is resuscitated, I shouldn't say that, because This I actually say, if I weren't interested in moving on enough with the Zohar, and I were trying, and I were not, I found this material too difficult, and I was stalling for time, we would have a lot of fun in this. This actually starts to veer into anti-Christian polemic. Believe it or not, in discussions in the Rishonim of our mitzvahs betelos la'asid lavo, it gets to be a lot of fun. We're going to see the Gemara in a second, but the question, it really, there are so many things that come up here. I would give the following analogy: if mesim are chafshim, if mesim are potter from the mitzvahs, there are two assumptions. Number one, the mesim are potter from the mitzvahs. Now, a mes can't do anything, but can you? You know, a katan is not chayiv in mitzvahs. A 5-year-old is not prohibited in eating chazir, but you're not allowed to give chazir to a 5-year-old. Right, so the mace can't do anything, but are you allowed to put kilayim on the mace? And what happens when the mace arises at tchias hamesim? Now, that fascinating question of when someone dies and has had tchias hamesim is, you know, spawns a fascinating halachic question, which I think we know the answer to. But for those who believe that the cessation of all cardiac—I'm sorry, Larry's not here—all cardiac activity. So when a person has a heart transplant and they remove the old heart at that particular juncture, that should be a cessation of all cardiac activity. That person should be dead, and when they put a new heart in and the patient sort of awakens, their wife should be an almana. As I jokingly say, that's the solution to the aguna problem, if that were true. Okay? You temporarily stop the heart, remove the heart, and put it back in, so you don't have to rejection. That would solve problems. There are presumably easier ways of resolving the aguna problem. But
he has a heart.
We know he doesn't already. He's got the physical heart. So the question is, are you chayav in mitzvahs after you are resuscitated? Now, there might be a difference between, let's say, we know Eliyahu and Elisha resuscitated a few dead people. Maybe that tchias hamesim is different than the tchias hamesim la'asid lavel. Okay. So anyway, this is going to get somewhat interesting. But those are the two reasons. Those are the two reasons one might consider. Number one, lo'eg la'rash, which is the one that's intuitive. But number two, what's the din la'asid lavel? Yes.
Can you just go back to Shatnez? What are the parameters of Shatnez in terms of hana'ah?
Shatnez is mutter b'hana. There is only one. It's mutter b'achila too. I would say it's only. There's only one thing you can't do. There's only one thing you can't do with shatnez. You can't get hana shel levisha, hana shel chimum. To provide protection, to provide warmth, to provide shelter, that you're not allowed to do
for yourself.
For yourself.
But you could put it on your slave or
Your animal, yes. In principle, on your animal, if you're not going to be sitting on it. You know, when you sit on top of kelayim, depending on how hard it is, there are all sorts of dinim. There are maybe only drop on it. It depends what things we're afraid about. Maybe some of it gets wrapped around you. But in principle, you can use it for all the purposes where nobody's violating up. No, so not getting hana.
You have no violation, seemingly, if you put it on a mate, because you're allowed to have.
Correct, unless the mace was not allowed to wear it, in which case you're being over lifnei iver. Someone who's iver and chayresh and what? Well, okay, so right, so but yes, in principle, correct. In other words,
put it on your child,
assuming that the mace.
Because
you're not allowed to give your child chazir to eat, so
right.
You can't put chatnez on him either.
It's not a chatnez issue when you put your
It's being machil nevelos lakotan, to use the expression. So if a mace is not chayiv in kilayim, in chatnez, so then putting it on the mace, there's no violation at all, right? Okay. So, the Gemara Menachos, which is where most of all the dinim of tzitzis are discussed in Shas. In case you're wondering, there is actually a little. We're going to encounter a comment at the end of our Tosos about Sfarim Hachitzonim. We normally use the term Sfarim Hachitzonim to refer to the Apocrypha and the Pseudepigrapha, and that may be used that way in the Gemara once. When Tosos talks about Sfarim Hachitzonim here, he means what are known as the Mesechtos Zutos. If you look in the back of the Avodah Zarah volume in the Vilna Shas, I wonder if it's even in this. It might be. It might be in our Avodah Zarahs. Yes, it is. What a coincidence. Okay, in the back of the Vilna Shas here, since it's the end of Nezikin, they print Meseches Avos, then they print my beloved Meseches Edios, which was my dissertation work, and then they print, those are two of the 63 Mesechtos of Shas, Avos and Edios. But then they print in the back, if you turn to the back of your Gemaras, way, way back, you'll encounter first, depending whether you turn to the right place, Avos to Rabbi Nassan, way, way back, Adrian, keep going. Okay, now you could stop probably, maybe. Anybody see Avos to Rabbi Nassan? I better check. Do we have,
Sefer Mordechai.
Oh, they chose this. Skimp on you. Oh, that's terrible. Okay, in the back of a regular Vilna Shas, I don't see it there, they print all these little mesechtas. They kind of look like brisos. Many of these individual pieces will appear in Shas one place or another. These are mesechtas, we assume, from the Gaonic period. They may be being compiled of earlier works, but you have Mesechas Avos Rabbi Nassan, which some call the Tosefta Mesechas Avos. You have Mesechas Sofrim, which is the source of many important dinim, which are just not discussed in the Gemara. You even have a Mesechas Tzitzis. But Tzitzis is not, so we're going to encounter, Tosus is going to quote a Meseches, what does he quote here? What does he quote? Smachos. Meseches Smachos is one of the, is a major source of the laws of Avelus. Smachos is a euphemism. I know it sounds funny, you know, when people leave a Shiva house and they say we should see each other just on Smachos. I mean, literally Smachos, but you know, Smachos is a euphemism here.
That's why I've always...
So Tosus will talk about a little bit the status of those mesechtos, because they shouldn't have the same authority as the Gemara, but there are places that we follow some of the mesechtos smachos against what it says in the Mishnah or what it says in the Gemara. Okay, so there is a mesechtos called Tzitzis, but the primary, there's no mesechta in Shas called Tzitzis. Where the laws of Tzitzis described, they're found in Menachos, because the Mishnah Menachos, Mishnayos go off on a tangent. When you have a mitzvah with multiple parts, can you do one part without the others, or is doing one part worthless? So with Tzitzis, the Mishnah, the fourth parak is called Perak HaTcheles. It's called Perak HaTcheles because the Mishnah says that if you, let's say, how many of the men wearing Tzitzis have Tcheles in your Tzitzis? Okay, I have Tcheles in my Tzitzis now. It took me a long time to get there. But according to one sheet in the Mishnah, you're not Yotzei the Mitzvah. But we paskin HaTcheles Einam HaKeves Es Alevan V'Alevan Einam HaKeves HaTcheles. If you only have one or the other, you're Yotzei. But if you only have two of the Tzitzis and you don't have the other two, it's Ma'akev. The Arba Tzitzis and Ma'akva Zoso. So that's why, because in that Mishnah, all the laws, it happens with Tfilin too. Most of the law, almost all the laws of Tfilin and Tzitzis and Mezuzah has a couple other Sugis and Shas, and Sefer Torah, are found in Menachos, of all strange places. You would think, you know, what's it doing there? That's why. So in the middle of this Sugya in Menachos, the Gemara says the following. Amar Rav Tubi Bar Kisna Amar Shmuel. Klei Kufsa Chayavim B'Tzitzis. Kalim, which are in your drawer, in the drawer of, you know, your cabinet, are chayav in tzitzis. Now, this doesn't mean, some of us has tablecloths in our house, and tablecloths are cloths, and they have four corners. Do you put tzitzis on your tablecloths? No. In order to be something chayav in tzitzis, it has to be warmed. But, let's say I have a baguette, I have a four-corner baguette, but I am not wearing it. It's sitting in my drawer. So, if it's meant to be worn, by Bale Chaim, and likely eventually would, Shmuel says it's Chaim now. This is a principle, we don't paskin this way, but this is the print, this is the sheet in the Gemara, that Tzitzis is a Chovas HaBeged, not a Chovas HaGavra. It's an obligation on the Beged, assuming it's a Beged that's typically worn, not on the person. And by the way, if you hold that way, women are Chayavos in Tzitzis also, because it's no longer a Mitzvah Sasei Shazam on Grama. If the Beged is always Chaim in Tzitzis, as long as it's intended eventually to be worn. So the Gemara says, Shmuel says, that klei kufsa, if it's sitting in the drawer, it's chayiv in tzitzis. But, umode Shmuel bezokein she'asa'o lechvodo shepetura. Shmuel is mode that if an older person made a beged lechvodo, it's a euphemism, older people are supposed to prepare, you're supposed to prepare your shrouds, right? This is the equivalent, you might say, of estate planning. Responsible adults have a will and plan their estate if necessary, for whatever purpose is necessary, because that's the responsible thing to do. Okay, so one of the things he does is he prepares shrouds. Zaken, shasa, lechvodo, it's p'tura, why? Because he doesn't intend to wear it when he's alive. He doesn't intend to wear it when he's alive, and presumably, you would think, when he's dead, he's not chayiv in mitzvahs. So since this is not a beged, that's, even though it's a four-cornered beged, it's not going to be worn by anybody in a way that would be chayiv in tzitzis, therefore even Shmuel's moda is pater. My taima, asher techase ba'am rachmana, and high love le'chsuye avida, it's not made for a covering. And then the Gemara says, b'hahi shaita, at that time though, you put tzitzis on the beged when the guy dies, when the zaken dies, mishum loeg larash cheirefosehu, because it would be a mockery when you put the garment on him at that time if there aren't tzitzis on it. Now,
don't you, when you bury a mace, don't you? In a talus?
So we're going to have to, you're going to be in suspense till next week, because I want to just sort of wrap this up, and then we will resume. I'll collect the sheets, because we'll have them for next week. Unless you promise you'll bring yours back, then you're welcome to study it during the week. Our minag is, minag Ashkenaz, is to passel the tzitzis. But that's a machlokas actually, mechaber and Rama. And most Rishon, and only some of the Rishonim of Ashkenaz, our beloved Balei HaTosfos, were the ones who explained why they weren't burying people in tzitzis. And there's a really interesting story of Rabbeinu Gershom, what he said on his deathbed. He said tzitzis chutz, and they weren't sure what that meant. And there are some fascinating stories that the Aruch HaShulchan quotes about the Gra, what he asked them to do, and what actually happened when he died. So we will get to see that. But the bottom line is the Gemara says that when the mace dies, you definitely put tzitzis on, because loeg larush. Now, the question is, if that's the case, why are you allowed to bury a mace in a beged of a bokalayim or beged sheish bokalayim? Is that not loeg larush? So that's the question that we have to deal with. So next week we'll resume with the Gemara Nida that talks about whether Mesim are Chayiv and Mitzvos once they arise from the dead, and that will raise further complications, and then we'll see the different ways that the Balei HaTosfos try to stitch all the Gemaras together, and then we'll look at what actually the Minhag is.